Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
So yeah, I was cooking a few things from the book. Some of them it was very strange, very alien. So I was like, yes, yes, that sounds completely bonkers. Let's do this.
That's part of the charm, I think, is that it's almost an archaeological excavation of a recipe. It's kind of trying to find out what some of the meanings. I guess we'll talk about that in a bit, because with Apicius, there's kind of so much of it is left to the chef. For the cook.
Yeah, yeah, that was the first thing that struck me as interesting, that, you know, it's you have a lot of freedom to maneuver around quantities and the ingredients. Hello, I'm Tom Dinas, and this is a Delicious Legacy podcast. Hope you're all safe and well. Welcome to our latest episode of Archaeogastronomical Adventures. On this episode, I am honored to have Andrew Kenrick from University of East Anglia with me, who studied extensively about the Roman cuisine 2,000 years ago. Specifically, he investigated a lot, and he is very passionate about, the famous, and some will say infamous, gourmand Apicius. The only complete surviving cookbook we have from antiquity bears his name. Who was he? What did he do to change the course of food and gastronomy in the ancient world, and also today? Andrew's knowledge on the subject is quite vast, and some of the historical facts are very, very fascinating. Together today, we'll delve into the time of the early Roman Empire, a universe of exotic delicacies, extravagant luxuries, extreme ingredients, and impossible journeys to unearth the tastiest food of the ancient world. Sit back, relax, and enjoy. So yeah, welcome to the Delicious Legacy podcast.
Thank you. Pleased to be here.
Thanks for joining me on this little archaeogastronomical adventure, as I like to call them. I don't know if that's a term, but...
Well, it is now.
But I like it. Yeah, so how did you involved with Apicius?
Oh, it's one of these happy coincidences, really, that seems to have shaped my kind of scholarship. So I originally studied archaeology and ancient history way back in 1999, 2000. And then changed careers after that. I didn't become an archaeologist. I became an editor. And by a very roundabout route, I ended up back at university in 2016, at University of East Anglia, doing an MA in creative nonfiction and biography, with no intention of using ancient history or drawing on my archaeological interests. That was always just a hobby, kind of a passing interest. And that same year, I took a trip to Rome and visited an old colleague, a friend, and she took me out for dinner, and it was the most amazing meal. It was modern Roman cuisine, but it was one of these quirky family restaurants where there was no menu. The waiter came and sat at your table and explained what there was. And it was all sorts of things like horse meat and glands and bull's balls.
Yeah.
all sorts of things like this. It was very, I'm quite an adventurous eater, but it definitely pushed me to the limit. And I started writing about this for one of my projects. I wrote an account of this, and it's two things clicked, really, which was, well, what would, you know, how would this modern Roman cuisine, did it bear any relation to ancient Roman cuisine? And it started me kind of researching, well, what was ancient Roman cuisine? And you can't really go very far along that line of research without coming across Apicius, who is this, I guess I always describe him as a Roman celebrity chef.
Yeah, yeah.
And he became the focus of my attention. So I was fascinated to discover he still had a cookbook bearing his name is still in print. And we still have records of his of recipes attributed to him. And it became the sole project for my master's. So I ended up writing my dissertation on Apicius, not so much necessarily on Roman cuisine, but on the life of Apicius and how much we can deduce about him from his cookbook.
Yeah.
And then, one thing led to another, and that ended up being my project.
Yeah.
And over the course of it, of course, I ended up cooking his recipes just as a way of trying to get inside.
Yeah.
Inside his mind.
How long took you to finish that project?
That was just for a year. That was.
Yeah.
And it ended up, it was quite self-contained. It ended up being quite a short self-contained piece of writing, kind of focusing on what we know about the end of Apicius's life, which is he lived quite a, he was I guess we'll maybe talk about this in more detail, but I should caveat this, but there's most of what we know about Apicius is speculation and gossip, and there's questions about whether he was a real character at all.
Really?
So one of the things, one of the famous things attributed to him is that he was a very rich aristocrat, possibly, in the first century, start of the first century AD. And he famously spent all his fortune on exotic ingredients and throwing fantastic banquets and experimenting with gastronomy. And when he got down to his last 10 or 12 million sesterci, which is about $8 or $9 million in today's money, he declared that he could not live so frugally and killed himself. So that's kind of... so I took that was the focus, the kind of rise and fall of Apicius.
Yeah.
And I tried to write something that might resemble a biography, kind of based on what we know. A lot of it ended up being quite speculative because we don't know a huge amount.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, it's so much stuff to learn and find out about the Roman Empire at that time.
Absolutely, but he's a subject very close to my heart. I do hope to go back to him as a as a subject, I think. Just because I could spend all day writing about Roman food and talking about Roman food, especially Apician Roman food, not necessarily.
I've read your stuff, and obviously it was really nicely written and very interesting. I mean, the detail, as you said, it might not be so real, or might be a lot of elements there that they're myths. But, I mean, it's so fascinating. Yeah, so many things that I didn't know, basically, that he was friends with the emperors. The things that struck me, firstly, was that you called him the worst of all gourmands. I kind of laughed with that line. Why the worst?
Just because I think he took it to an extreme, really. He was, I think he was one of these extravagant characters who... It definitely indulged that kind of horrific grotesquery of overeating.
Right.
So it's just some of the, you know, the things he would eat. So you find in his cookbook, and again, I must caveat I guess we'll talk about this as well. The fact that the cookbook probably wasn't written by him. It was just either piggybacking on his fame, because his name became a byword for kind of grotesque gourmandry.
Yeah.
But the stuff in there, like peacock tongues and flamingo tongues and kind of a proto foie gras, you know, fig fattened pig livers, which they were fattened by stuffing the pig full of figs.
Yeah, yeah.
And all sorts of kind of omelets involving all sorts of offal and various types of meat all shoved together.
It was all the extravagant, weird ingredients thrown all together, basically. And yeah, okay, okay. I understand now why you call him the worst of all gourmands. I guess, was he the first? I mean, I don't think he was the first, but certainly was the first extravagant.
Yeah, it's kind of... he definitely wasn't the first. There were the Romans in the first century BC. The Emperor Augustus had to pass a law, what was called a sumptuary law, which basically limited what people could spend on money because this kind of overeating, this exotic, extravagant dining was getting out of control. So Apicius certainly isn't the first to kind of get carried away with his eating. Yeah. But he comes along at quite a interesting time when the Republic is just tipping into the empire. You've got that change from the Roman Empire starts to become it's spread across the whole of the Mediterranean. It's got a huge amount of provinces under its control, and you've got the rise of the middle classes. So you've got the equestrian order, which was the second of the Roman aristocratic, the kind of lower echelons of the Roman aristocracy, with the senators as the kind of upper echelon.
The upper, yeah.
And that's kind of, yeah, exactly. And that's the equestrians were kind of, they were like the middle classes. They'd made their money through being merchants and bankers. And
yeah.
And I guess you still see this today as middle classes kind of rise up. They develop their own tastes and their own interests in things.
Certainly.
And Apicius is definitely, his cookbook is kind of pitched at that level. It's probably not what the emperors were eating, and it's certainly not what the kind of Roman working classes are eating, but it's what kind of the aspiring middle classes who wanted to show off how extravagant they could be by serving up a platter of,
yeah,
I don't know, fig fattened pig livers or peacock tongues or stuffed dormice or stuff like that.
Yeah, all that, which kind of sound like parts of a legend. Like, nobody would eat that. But
well, exactly.
I think, yeah.
Yeah, and some of the more grotesque elements of Roman cuisine, I think there must be a bit of that about them. Surely no one would go to that extent, or surely no one would go to that length to, you know, to import, I don't know, 1,000 peacocks or 100,000 flamingos just to make this dish.
Yeah, exactly. So, Apicius, tell me a little bit about, it was a real person apparently, so the first century, right? AD.
Yeah, so he crops up in, he's one of these characters who crops up in other, the kind of histories of other writers, quite often as a anecdote about how awful someone was behaving, or so he comes up, he crops up in Suetonius, Pliny the Elder mentions him, and there's a Seneca says something about him, and there's enough people that mention him that were kind of maybe near contemporaries that suggest that he existed, and he's quite often attributed to these various larger than life stories. But then there's a couple of Apicius's. So there's one that crops up in about the 3rd century BC who can't be the same character. And then there's another one that comes up a bit later. And it's not entirely clear whether these were related, if the name Apicius is maybe a byword. It certainly becomes a byword for excessive consumption, and whether it's... But the Romans had, as part of their names, the third part of the name was often a kind of honorific title.
Yes.
So it could be that Apicius is, you know, if someone has gained the name Apicius, maybe it means they are a famous gourmet. But
yeah,
we tend to associate the Apicius as a guy called Marcus Gaius Apicius, who lived in the... So he's around 31 BC to about 35 AD. Mm. He lives... So in that period where, like I said, the Emperor Augustus, the Emperor Tiberius... Rome's just becoming an empire.
From Republic, yeah, and things change a little bit. Yeah,
exactly. And so it's quite a period of change. It's a time where people could make quite a lot of money, and it's presumed that he was probably one of these people who made quite a bit of money. The two things we know about him, not to say for sure, but the two stories associated with him are the one about his death, which I mentioned already, and then there's one about... how he was in possibly his home city of Minturnae, which is down towards Naples, towards modern-day Naples.
Yeah.
And he was feasting on prawns, and someone told him that there was even better prawns could be found off the coast of North Africa.
Tell me about the story. Yeah, I love this story.
So he hustled down to the quayside. he commandeered a boat, probably spent vast amounts of money commandeering a boat, and sailed to North Africa, which is probably at this time a 10 or 12 day journey and quite dangerous seas. And then he got there, harangued some local fishermen who probably brought him local prawns, and he realised that actually the prawns from back home were far better, and he ordered his captain to turn around and sail home again. And it's one of these probably apocryphal stories, but it was used by a lot of the Roman writers to illustrate what a crazy character he was.
Yeah.
And then he comes, and so he comes up in a number of these stories, and then quite often in quite almost always sensationalist context. So one of the things that happened in the Roman markets is there were quite often auctions. So in the Roman fish market, so the larger fish would be put up for auction. And the Emperor Tiberius came upon a very large mullet and put it up for auction. And he had a wager that either Apicius or one of Apicius's rivals would buy it. And he wasn't right about Apicius, but Apicius's rival did buy it. So he kind of comes up in the context of these stories. And then quite often it's in the context of kind of these scandalous stories, usually to do with food and overeating. But then there's a couple of times when he crops up in other scandals that aren't immediately obviously related to food. So he gets associated with Maecenas, who is one of Augustus's kind of lieutenants, who's this kind of another larger than life character who had a load of the famous poets like Virgil and Horace were his kind of students. He was their patron, and he used to wander around in his dressing gown and have long hair and generally be quite extravagant. And Apicius is said to be one of his, he had earned Maecenas' patronage. And then the other character who he's quite often associated with is Sejanus, who was for a long time was kind of almost co-regent with the Emperor Tiberius. He was quite a powerful self-made man who ended up over-scheming, and his downfall led to he got executed, his family all got executed, and Apicius comes up in relation to him that it's possibly Apicius's daughter was married to Sejanus. So again, again, we're not entirely sure how much of this is true and how much of this is supposition, but he's certainly in the first century at the centre of quite a rich series of noble contacts who may or may not be kind of involved in all these various very Roman scandals. But it's not entirely sure whether that's just because he's a byword for scandalous character, and some of the Roman writers might think, well, if we just put a mention of Apicius in here, it will kind of add a bit more of a, you know, spice to this.
Nothing changed really the last 2,000 years.
Exactly. But he's just an interesting catch. I found myself a bit like a archaeological detective. I'd sift through all sorts of sources, just trying to find a tantalizing hint of whether he exists, you know, I look for a mention of him here and a mention of him there.
Yeah.
And it's quite fascinating trying to put it together.
Certainly.
And obviously one of the obvious sources was his cookbook, which again is a fantastic collection of recipes. It's the oldest. It's not the first cookbook, but it's certainly our oldest surviving cookbook.
Exactly. It's the one that survives almost intact, I guess.
Exactly. And there's quite a lot of recipes. I think it's about a dozen recipes in that are attributed to him. So I don't know if this is true or not, but I decided the ones that bore his name were probably ones that originated with him. So there's like Minital, Apician style, for example, or Apician patina, that kind of stuff. But then there's all sorts of, this is what added the element of mystery, because there's a number of recipes in there that are attributed to, so there'll be a recipe that bears the name of an emperor that lived long after Apicius died, which kind of raised the question of, well, did he actually write this cookbook? And of course the assumption is he probably didn't. It's probably a collection of recipes that were pieced together either, you know, long after his death, or just kind of came to be by being gathered together into a single volume.
Yeah, exactly. When do we speculate that this book was written, the Apicius Cookbook?
So I think it's probably from around the 4th century. AD. So probably about 3 or 4 centuries after Apicius died.
Exactly.
And then But it's quite hard to tell because the two original copies, there's two surviving copies, one in the Vatican Library and one in the Library in New York.
Right.
And but these originate there, not kind of 9th century, so quite a long time after that.
I see. But the use of Latin in the books was vulgar Latin.
Yes. Yes. Certainly not. It's vulgar Latin, which is kind of slang Latin. It's Latin that would have been used by working classes. The sort of Latin you'd expect to be used in a kitchen in ancient Rome, but certainly not the sort of Latin you'd expect to be used by a kind of upper middle class.
Yeah, certainly a cook.
Gourmet like Apicius.
Yeah, so not a chef, not a gourmet, not a high class, but a slave cook probably in a kitchen.
Yeah, exactly. So it's one of the assumptions that, one of the accepted kind of truths of the cookbook is it wasn't written by Apicius, it was written by maybe one slave, or it was from it was adapted from the recipes of slaves and quite possibly from a lot of slaves over the years, almost like a collection of, you know, a collection of recipes that might be passed down from one generation of chefs to the next and slowly added to, which is why it's got this kind of almost patchwork feel of, you know, here's some recipes attributed to this person, here's some recipes in the style of this person, and then we just put his name on the front.
Exactly. You put the name in the front, and probably will sell better.
Exactly, if you're a Roman, you'll have heard of. I mean, the name Apicius.
Exactly,
Apician was, like I said, was a byword for kind of gourmandry for a long time. So, yeah, absolutely, it's like
we don't use that term anymore. Sadly, I think we use a lot of Epicurean or Lucullian, I guess.
Yeah, it's full enough. I think it lasts till maybe the end of the kind of late antiquity, I think. But yeah, it would have been comparable to Epicurean, which we, of course, still use today.
Yeah, exactly. Oh, yes, man. So many things about Apicius.
Have you tried to cook any of his dishes?
Oh, yeah, for sure.
I think a number of them are in the classical cookbook, aren't they?
Yeah, exactly. The classical cookbook offers a lot of recipes from the Book of Apicius. So I've tried quite a few of them. I've tried them with success, let's say. Yeah, not initially, but yeah, slowly after a few times and stuff. Yeah, definitely all of them, they were successful, I think.
Which ones have you enjoyed?
Okay, so I've done the recipes for the sausages. So there is smoked sausages, Lucanicae. And another, the white sausages. So I've done them both. They're really tasty recipes, really good. Was it the Parthian chicken as well by Apicius?
Yeah, Parthian chicken is it's in there.
There's another thing that I started doing ancient Greek and Roman dinners about 5 years ago, like a pop-up restaurant type of thing.
Okay.
And so I started doing, like, you know, starter, main, desserts, and so on. So one of the starters I made was with cucumber dressing, which was
I've made that.
So my take was like, okay, we have the Greek rusk, the barley bread from antiquity, we know that. So I took the barley bread, the dried barley bread, and I used it with the cucumber dressing. And so, yeah, soaks all the juices with the liquamen, or garum with mint. I found wild mint from the mountains. I got that, you know, the original mint, blah, 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 you know, wine, vinegar, and so on. So it soaks. The barley rusk becomes nice and moist. You have the marinated, almost pickled kind of thing, cucumber. And then on top, I put soft goat's cheese, like fresh goat's cheese. So it's kind of like a modern take on the on the Cretan dacos, which is with tomato and fresh cheese, or let's say something like bruschetta, like modern day Italian bruschetta, but with cucumber and cheese. That was really successful, really popular dish.
That sounds great. And I guess it's one of the, that kind of speaks to the collection of recipes, I suppose, because they are so multicultural in a sense. They're clearly taken, they're clearly drawing on ingredients and recipes from around the Mediterranean and beyond. And I think that sounds very in the spirit of it.
Yeah, exactly. Then I've tried a few times the salad, Katabia, the chicken salad, which is a bit more complicated to serve it at 30 or 40 guests. So that's kind of...
did you make it authentically? Did you use the...
The brains, the lamb's brains.
I was going to say the brains and the livers and the sweetbreads, isn't there?
Sweetbreads.
It's sweetbreads.
Well, I love sweetbreads, so when I do it for myself, I use that. So no problem there. But no, when I served it in restaurants, it was without the sweetbreads and the brains.
Yeah, when I cooked it, I was... like I said, I can be squeamish when it comes to offal, and most of the time I applied an offal filter to Apicius's recipe. I tended to take out the offal.
And of course, almost in every event that I did, we served spiced wine, because it's been going on through the ages, actually, throughout the home of Roman Empire, then the Byzantine Empire, they served spiced wine. Conditum paradoxum was so I used to make it for any kind of themed night, you know, Roman or Byzantine and so on. So yeah, that was like the aperitif when the guests were coming to the dinner, spiced wine, and it works really well with having tasty honey and mastic resin, which I can find because I can go to the local delicatessen shops. The Greek ones around London, and I can get mastic from Kios, and you have nice honey and this and that, bay leaves and black pepper, da da da. And yeah, it's beautiful. I think it's a very nice aperitif and cocktail, whatever you want to call it.
Yeah, it was the last thing I cooked, actually. And it's his first recipe that appears in Apicius, so I think it's quite appropriate as the first thing.
Mm. And did you, obviously, you had the book. The Book of Apicius, right? A cookery book. Did you cook extensively almost all the recipes? Or are there too many?
There are too many. The most recent translation is, I think it's 400 pages.
Oh, wow. Okay.
I probably did count them. Maybe I'll tell you afterwards how many there were. But there are, I think there's well over, there's a few hundred, I think, recipes in there. So it's certainly too much.
That's too much, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, I tended to focus, I needed a method in terms of how to, so partly I'd use, because I was trying to tell his story as well, I'd find recipes that seemed to fit parts of his story. So the spiced wine surprise that you just mentioned, I thought fitted with the end, kind of the end of his life.
Yeah.
Quite a sentimental recipe. In fact, it's the only recipe that has what might be described as kind of a, you know, in the same way that a modern cookbook might have a bit of a kind of description to start with, which maybe adds a bit of emotion or empathy or kind of explanation as to why it's being cooked. The only recipe that really does that is one for bulbs, which talks about serving them. If you're seeking the harbour of Venus, which makes me kind of think it was done possibly for... it was possibly a recipe associated with marriage or courtship or something like that.
Yeah, 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 for sure. Yeah, it was, I mean, the way you described the recipe on your thesis, it was quite intriguing, basically. So you cooked it and there was something missing, and then you put it in the oven and roasted.
Yeah.
And then all came together.
Yeah, exactly. So, I mean, I used shallots, I think it was, one of the things you'll quickly realize if you go to the original recipes of Apicius is they're very vague. I'm sure you found this. There's certainly no measurements and no cooking times, and quite often not really a full ingredients list. So, for example, the recipe for bulbs, I mean, it's just called bulbs, but it says boil the bulbs and it doesn't say what sort of bulb. I kind of assumed the Romans ate quite a lot of different edible bulbs, like edible hyacinth bulbs and that sort of thing. But for a lot of the times, I think you're probably a bit more dedicated than I am, but a lot of the times I was either pressed for time or circumstance in Norwich, I guess, and I'd have to make do. So part of the fun was trying to work out which corners to cut, which substitutes to make. So I ended up, I think I used shallots in the end for that one. But it was this... very tasty recipe in the end. It's kind of involved boiling these shallots up with all sorts of different honey and vinegar and obviously garum and spices. Yeah. But it came out as this kind of quite gloopy mess. And then, as you said, I was making one of the roast pork dinners as well, dishes at the same time, and I just put it in the oven, and it kind of came together. And I kind of wonder if that's almost how the cookbook was meant to be used. It was kind of like a list of suggestions and guidances to from like one expert to another. So if you were a Roman chef or a Roman cook with this cookbook, you'd obviously fill in the gaps yourself, or you'd go, well, of course this needs to go in the oven, or of course this, I'll use these shallots instead of these hyacinth bulbs.
Yeah, certainly. I think that sounds plausible. And somewhere here, we'll end part one for today. Join us again tomorrow for the second and final part of our episode about Apicius. Remember, if you want exclusive content, the podcast episodes earlier, and ad-free, join me on Patreon under the Delicious Legacy name. Here, for just $3 per month, you can have all the above. This way, you'll help me create the episodes faster, release them quicker, and concentrate more on researching other interesting subjects from the ancient world. Additionally, you will get straight to your inbox lots of exclusive material, such as recipes, images, and other tailor-made content. Thank you for listening, and goodbye.
Up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here, and it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. Hello Fresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. Hello Fresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight, and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.